The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on the following show are solely those of the host, guest, and its callers. It's time for The Growth Strategist. Here is your host, Aldana Ambler.
Welcome to the program. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler, and this program is designed for companies in the mid-market, usually between 20 million and 200 million, and you're all looking for some rapid growth, from what I understand. And so we have like four different segments of listeners. There's one group that's at about 20 million. There's another group of you that is at about 10 million. There's a third group that are division heads of corporations listening in. You see yourself as entrepreneurial. And the fourth group is some micro-sized companies. This is where you're headed. And I like to alternate, rotate through different kinds of industries and different locations, and we rotate through different growth strategies. And so the last couple of years, we've had some marvelous guests. I've just been very impressed with people that are, you know, walking the talk. They're not just saying, we want to grow and we're going to take some chances. These are people that are living it. And so what I did is I went back to several of the people that were taking some chances and thought that the audience would enjoy. Where are they now? So this beginning of this year, we're doing a series, a short series on four or five of the previous guests and finding out, okay, how did it work out? You were going to do a new product launch, or you were going to launch a whole new set of locations, or you were going to take on a new marketplace. You were going to do some venture capital, some big thing that, you know, was going to be a big risk, and it doesn't always work. You know, for those of you who are living this journey, you know, you can lay out your strategic plan, and that doesn't necessarily mean everything is all smooth. And the second theme of this series is that in taking on some new challenges and taking on some new risk, you always have to juggle the balance of cash, people, execution, and strategy. So that's our double theme, is where are they now, and, you know, what's that combination of people, cash, execution, and strategy? Now, let me think out loud about this, because before I invite my guests, today we have Jerry Farrow, who's the CEO of SunRx. And I'm going to make sure that you know what he does and what his company does. He just got back from the Inc. 500 conference, where his company was selected to be number 5. Hot damn, Jerry. That was really cool. And we'll hear about his journey as to, you know, what are they doing to introduce two or three new products, even as they're racing through that kind of growth. I want to think out loud about this balance of cash, people, execution, and strategy, particularly when you are launching new products. Okay, now think about this. You know you want to have excellence in all four. Like, everybody says that, but it's almost to the point where it's a throwaway sentence. And each company, what I find, is that they have to decide which of those is going to be in the lead, which one they're going to attack first, which one has to be stellar so that the rest of it kind of flows. And it's not the same answer for every company. Now, if you read some of the literature out there, there's some authors that swear, no matter what the situation is, you always have to start with good people. Jim Collins, when he talks about good to great, wonderful author, great speaker, et cetera, et cetera, I get it. You know, if you don't have some stellar leaders of the organization, it just falls apart. But when I've been working with fast growth companies for the last 35 years, what I noticed is it's not one answer. There are some companies that their strategic positioning, what they're about, what the top leaders are doing, some of them are great at working money. Some of them truly understand the art of the deal. They know how to make, you know, squeeze just a little more EBITDA out of a deal. They know how to make sure that the venture capitalists are responding to them. They're ahead of it. And working money is their primary attribute. That's what they start with, no matter what their product is, no matter what their market is. And you may be that, you know, that working money is your attribute. It could be that, you know, what you're really excelling at, what brought you to the dance, is excellence in execution. That customer service, follow-through, process, you know, making sure that the operations really is resilient. No matter what you push through this thing, it's excellence in execution that you're really good at. Some companies and the leadership of the business and what brought you to the dance is that you really have, you're creative. You can figure out a new way to do a product. You have a strategic mind. You can see an opportunity quicker than somebody else. You're more nimble. You're able to accept change. You get a kick out of creating new stuff. You hear how different these are? They're very, very different. And the faster your growth of your business, the larger it gets, the more the demand for you to have excellence in all four. Yeah, yeah, we get that. But what brought you to the dance? And what do you actually have to make absolute certain is stellar no matter what? Because not all your ideas are going to work. Not all your people are going to stick. Not all the deals are going to work out the way you thought they did. Otherwise, all the venture capitalists would be just rolling in millions and billions of dollars. And the reality is, and it typically, one out of nine deals pays for the other eight. You get it? So, as you're listening to the guests when they're talking in this series of Where Are They Now, what we listen for and what I'm interviewing for is, do they know of those four things, where did they really succeed? Where did they really excel? What do they need to do to protect that core competence so that it doesn't go away? And when they add, what's the sequence of how they do that? Because it starts to blur. So we listen to Pinnacle Services last week, Jim Humrick House, talking about how they have been excellent in execution. It's an IT services company. They've changed a product that was an internal cost center related to timesheets and have invested in this over 2-3 years to have it turn into a profit center that's now one half of their revenue. Big change from, you know, being strictly, you know, billing for services and hours to actually having something that, you know, now they have this product and it can become half of their revenue. And they're rapid growth. These guys are really growing really quickly. Okay, how do they protect their execution? Now, the guest today, and I'll introduce the details of it. When I introduced him in September, Jerry and I were talking about being a specialist in his industry. And he's in a very competitive industry. SunRx's mission, I'll read it and then he'll have to translate it for us because, you know, it's one of these in jargon kind of a business. If you're not, you know, part of the industry, you might not even know what a TPA is, and he's going to translate it for us. But he works in the prescription administration industry. Now think about that. It's got things like, cost containment is one of the goals. It's got, paperwork all over the place. But transparency hasn't been the main identification of that industry. It's been, you know, some people in the insurance industry. It's been some people in administration. It's been some people in regulations. It's been the pharmaceutical companies, et cetera. Behind the scenes, behind you and I as Joe and Susie Public, there is a lot of maneuvering, a lot of machinations that can cost companies a tremendous amount of money. So you need to be a specialist to understand, okay, where's the potential for loss? Where's the potential for fraud? Where's the potential for mistakes? Where's the potential for just omissions? And they have been, in my mind, you know, it's not just the execution being excellent. They've decided we're going to be committed to full disclosure. We're going to do things like favored nations pricing, which he'll explain, and taking a chance to do 100% pass-throughs on all discounts, rebates, and market share allowances. Now, you don't have to be an expert in their industry. You get that. You get that that would be taking a chance in an industry like what they're in. The word transparency is a foreign language. The idea of pass-throughs, huh? You're actually going to pass the discounts on and mean it? You actually would think about, you know, how would you negotiate, you know, when they go after a client. It's like swallowing a watermelon. You're talking about companies that have 1,000 employees. How do you make sure you can take care of them? Get in the mindset that you're Jerry Farrow and you're running SunRx. And, you know, would the unions want to have you help them? Would companies want you to do it in the beginning? Would they trust what you're saying? You walk into this in the year 2002. Would there be automatic receptivity to what you're saying? There'd be interest. There'd be, and with their track record, they certainly had all the expertise. That wasn't the issue. But wouldn't there be some inertia? Wouldn't there be, I don't know, it sounds too good. And to have to take the chance to say, we're going to work on the software. We're going to work on the transparency. We're going to make sure we actually save you money. We're going to be driving out the greed in an industry. Now think about that. If that's your positioning, which is what our guest is about, they're going to lead with money management. They're going to be experts at cash and deals. Are they going to lead with the key people that would make that work? Are they going to lead with excellence in execution? Are they leading with strategy? Now, in my mind, they led with strategy. They led with a recognition of what was going on in the industry and are doing something about it, and it's gutsy. And as soon as you take that kind of chance to fly in the face of some of the norms of the industry that you're in, and a lot of our guests have done that. That's why we're being this transparent. A lot of the guests, if you listen, go back to some of the shows, the ones that have really made it, the ones that are making a noise, the ones that are, you know, drawing excellent staff to them, the ones that are magnets for business, they're making a statement in their industry, fixing something that was screwed up. They're, you know, filling a need. They're not just, you know, putting out another product and throwing a bunch of service at something. They're making a statement. That's a strategic move. And once you lead with strategy, what are the implications to the rest of it? One of the things that happens is that if you're going to be making that much noise and you're going to be saying, we're really that different, and it's going to be any kind of statement like stomping out greed, for gosh sake, you're going to live in a glass house. Now think about instantly what happens to you. Who do you need to hire? How does it affect your recruitment? Do you have to do more due diligence, more investigation of your key people? Yep. How does it affect your cash management and your financing? If you're going to be swallowing big accounts, like, you know, in great big jumps, because if you're taking that big a statement, taking on a big industry, you're not going to be doing it with onesie-twosie accounts. You're going to be doing it with big companies, you know, relatively big companies that are saying, okay, we want to drive down costs. This is gagging us. You know, medical costs and anything healthcare related is gagging total industries. It keeps coming out about the car companies. It'll come in big bites. So what do you need to do about execution? You are taking on something that needs software, hardware, process, quality assurance, et cetera. The implications of having all of those things fast are right there in your face when you take an aggressive strategy. Now, I'm going to take a break with that thought. I just wanted to pose, when you're listening to Jerry Farrow talk about how his company is growing to being labeled 5 on the Inc. 500, I want you to listen with that ear of the journey that they're on, of taking on something that really needs fixed, and how transparent that must feel. This is The Growth Strategist, Help with Aldana Ambler. We'll be right back.
From the stock market floor to your computer, you're listening to Voice America Business.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldana can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the Growth Strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldana Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldana played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldana Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ALDONA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONNA. TheGrowthStrategist.com. Achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
When you have a stroke, you may not even notice it right away. But then, time passes, and the symptoms get worse. One minute you feel fine, and the next, your speech could be slurred or not make sense. One side of your body might become numb. You might see double. You drop the TV remote because you can't hold up your arm. That's because, after a stroke, every minute you don't get help is another minute that your brain is being starved of oxygen. The warning signs of a stroke include sudden numbness or weakness of the face, arm, or leg, sudden trouble seeing, speaking, or understanding. If you experience any of these warning signs, call 911 immediately, because time lost is brain lost. Visit strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE today. A public service announcement from the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Welcome back to the show. This is Aldana Ambler. I'm in there on The Growth Strategist, and today's guest is Jerry Farrow of SunRx. You there, Jerry?
I am. Good morning.
Did I embarrass you?
No, I didn't realize I worked so hard.
You did, too. You only sleep like 4 or 5 hours a night, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, we got to back up. Some of the listeners might not have heard the initial program, and I am going to recommend that people go back to the program. I believe you were on it September 19th of 2006, and you didn't know you were on the Inc. 500 at that point. You could tell you were headed toward it, but I don't think you knew you were on it. What, did you by then?
We had not, no.
Yeah, I don't think you knew by then. But anyway, I mean, you knew you were on this crazy journey of $3 million in 2003 and $17 million by 2004 and $27 million in 2005 and $38 million in 2006. I mean, you knew you were on that ride.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, you knew that. But we need a little bit of background. What is it about you and the couple of guys at the top of your organization that took this on? What was your background for you to want to do this?
Our key management team all have a strong background in healthcare, all different pieces of healthcare. My background has always been on the administration. Our president, Christine Sarnelli, has really been on the PBM, pharmacy benefit management space. And our chief marketing officer was a former president of NovaCare and has been in that whole occupational med arena most of his adult life. And most recently, as you'd seen, we had brought on a new chief operating officer, Wayne Van Ack, who most recently was president of a large PBM. It's actually owned by WebMD.
Now, what's a PBM?
PBM's a pharmacy benefit manager.
Okay.
They're the folks out there that manage the ability for a prescription drug card to work at pharmacies across the country.
Okay. Because you know, we're listening. There's 55,000 people listening, and they're from all different kinds of backgrounds and all around the world. And so some of them may not know some of the jargon, even though a lot of them obviously have companies that are large enough to need what you guys do. And there's an administrator that's pulling their hair out, saying, "How do we drive down these costs?" Not all the listeners are going to know the jargon. So I will ask for translation every once in a while. How's that?
Sure.
Now you were part of a TPA right before you did this. What is that?
Yeah, kind of similar to what we're doing now is a PBA, Pharmacy Benefit Administrator. A TPA is a third-party administrator. Fundamentally, the difference, a third-party administrator gets involved in adjudication of medical, dental, vision, and in some instances, pharmacy claims. PBM is focused exclusively on pharmacy.
Okay. Now, how did you get into this? Did you guys just sit down over beers some night and say, this industry sucks and there's got to be a way to do it better, or did somebody come and ask you to do something?
Actually, the industry didn't used to suck, and when I sold my last company, I had a 5-year non-compete that was very restrictive. They wouldn't even let me spell health care, and over that period of time, when I got back in the game, one of our former gaming clients actually had said that pharmacy became a runaway train.
Mm-hmm.
And asked that we took a look at the data set that they provided, and I'm kind of a data hound and always up for a challenge. And I can tell you, for the first time in my healthcare career, I was absolutely confused. I couldn't understand the significant year-over-year increase in costs, and determined that the only way to really get to the bottom of it is to create a comprehensive auditing program that would go deep into the, you know, into the threads of data to understand exactly what was going on a transactional basis. And that's kind of when the whole plan of SunRx unraveled.
Oh, no kidding. So what happens is you, by problem-solving one company's issues, you saw some problems, you saw some issues that you could attack?
Well, the industry, as I knew it when I left, was pretty much transaction-based. They charge a flat fee for managing a program and negotiating contracts with pharmacies on behalf of a client, a true administrative role.
Okay.
And this industry lost its way, literally, and probably very aggressively over the last 8 years. And what used to be a straight-up transaction changed to low to no administrative fees. So back in the early 90s, when it was typical to see administrative fees per transaction in the $1.20 to $1.50 range, when I came back in and started looking at data sets, I saw 30 cents to zero. And when you take a look at the oligopolies that are in this space, are basically three 100-pound or 900-pound gorillas.
Yeah.
It's impossible when you take a look at their financials to recognize that. I guess what was most magical is they're reflecting gross fees of 30 cents, but producing EBITDA of $1.90 to $2 a transaction. So I've been looking for that same magic wand for the last 5 years.
Interesting. So now, what do you actually do compared to those three big gorillas? What's the difference?
I guess the difference and the challenge out of the gate, and you kind of hit the nail on the head in terms of creativity and challenges. Companies are believing that their total gross costs are 30 cents a transaction, and we were out proposing, you know, 10 times that. So the client says, well, why would I want to pay you that amount of money for fundamentally the same material services? And I said, well, you really can't compare 30 cents to $3. You really need to compare $3 to $12, and I can, you know, prove out to you that $10 or $11 per transaction is obtained through a 17 or 18 different methods of spreads and pricing differentials that are built into every claim transaction.
So it may look like it's 30 cents, but it really was deceptive.
Correct. And obviously the difference between the 30 cents and the $12 was seen, invisibly seen, in the, you know, tremendous increase in year-over-year costs the clients were experiencing on their pharmacy programs.
Was it through fraud? Was it through errors? Was it through negligence? What?
No, it was through creative reporting. I don't know that I'd use the word fraud, because the folks that are in that
I was carefully
that are,
worded.
Yeah, that are doing this on a day-to-day basis, believe they can and, legally, but, I guess that'll be an ongoing debate. Fundamentally things, for instance, like they'll negotiate a contract with a client at a discount of 15% off at a particular pharmacy when their actual discount at that pharmacy might be 16 off, and they keep the difference between the 15 and the 16.
Okay.
Repackaging.
And that's what you mean by pass-throughs. You're trying to deal with that.
Yes. You know, repackaging a mail order, for instance, where they'll take a pill out of a bottle, put it in a new bottle, put a new label on it, and they'll inflate the price. So getting a 50% or 60% discount off of a product that's been inflated 200% really doesn't do you very good at the end of the day. What we do is operate under complete and total transparency. With, you know, it's a fee-for-service model. We act as their advocate and the only one in the space willing to act as a contract fiduciary to always act in the client's best interest. Favored nations, you had touched on briefly, because we're acting in the client's best interest, on that example I'd given earlier on the 15 versus 16, if we have a contract with a client that starts at 15 and we go out next week and negotiate a better discount with a particular pharmacy chain, as soon as we deploy that discount in the system, the client gets the benefit of that discount. They don't have to worry about being smart enough next year to say, well, hey, you know, I think I should be getting a better discount here, not really knowing, you know, the other side of the ledger. We operate under full transparency and show both sides of the ledger. And a client always gets the same discount we do, and in exchange for that, we charge a fee.
Gotcha.
It's
a reasonable fee and a reasonable profit for having taken care of them. Your clients are happy.
Correct. And
now, what would prevent some people from just copying this?
Well, what it translates into in terms of client savings, I'll kind of jump into that first, is anywhere between 10 and 12%. So, you know, on a mid-sized client, for instance, in a 10,000 employee life range, you're looking at about $1.5 million worth of savings a year for doing nothing other than changing a piece of plastic in their wallet. Depending on that company's multiple, that could be $8 to $10 million worth of enterprise value.
Oh, yeah.
You know, to that organization.
You're going after companies that have like a minimum of 1,000 employees?
We did up until recently, and I guess we'll get into a couple new product launches that we have, but right now we can go down to as small as 25 lives on our new.
Oh, no kidding. There's a change right there. Yeah.
But our target market in the past, prior to the new product deployment, was always in excess of 1,000. We've got to do the same amount of work for a 50,000-person group as we do a 1,000-person group. So more is always better.
Your software is handling a lot of it. It's not that much more work for 1,000?
That's the beauty of it. It's all transactional processing. It kind of be like asking a credit card vendor, is it going to make any difference if you have, you know, 2 million transactions go through your system instead of 1 million transactions go through your system. The systems are very robust, and they're developed for capacity. So the only variable in this equation truly is customer service.
Gotcha.
And we have a pretty tight formula, one customer service person per 30,000 covered members. So exponentially, I really don't need to add a whole lot of infrastructure to support a larger group.
Gotcha. And then my question is, what would prevent somebody from just copying this and take away your competitive advantage? If it's so transparent, can't they just do it?
It's not as easy as it sounds.
Well, it doesn't sound easy at all, but what would prevent somebody from trying to just copy this?
I guess I'll give you two answers. The people that are actually in this space are not in a position to unwind what they've built. You know, they've built their you know, profit models based upon, in 2005, I haven't seen 06 numbers yet, but in 2005, north of $11 per transaction gross profit to get to the $1.50 to $1.90 EBITDA numbers. I'm talking about the 900-pound gorillas. So they can't really turn around and say, okay, well, I can do that same job for $3.50 because they obviously can't. If they're only dropping, you know, $2 to the EBITDA line on a 12-hour top line, obviously they need everything in between.
Yeah, but somebody else with similar kind of background with you that maybe has the IT background, et cetera, could try?
Yes. The barriers to entry in this space really are highly technical, so they'd have to have, enough capital to go on actually contract with 60,000 pharmacies, develop the software deployment, build out the marketing team, and, you know, so forth and so on. So
you guys have been running as fast as you can for the whole time you've been out of the box.
We have, and we're kind of the innovator in the transparency. You know, you're starting to read now more and more about state legislative transparent relationships with pharmacy benefit managers, and there's a lot of anti-lobbying, you know, lobbyists on the anti-transparency front. They obviously, you know, don't want that industry to change. It'll be a very great short play for a couple publicly traded companies.
It must sound like people promoting cigarette smoking, though, to some folks.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That's got to be a tough pitch. No.
It is.
It'd be interesting to hear what their logic is.
Well, how do you go back to a client you've been charging 30 cents to and say, by the way, I really need $3.50, but I'm going to give you a better discount? Well, why haven't you given me that discount all the while? So it becomes a very difficult conversation to have, particularly with an existing client and a new client. You know, when, you know, you've got three publicly traded companies that control 70% of the space right now. There were 150 PBMs, you know, 6 years ago. It's been consolidated down to about 43 now.
I'm sure they're aware of you.
And they, I think they probably have some idea that we're out there at this point.
Well, all right. Now, what we're going to do after the break, we're going to come back and talk about how you've stayed resilient in this run. And I want to hear about the three new products. It's two or three new products that you've done in the last 6 months, right?
Yes.
And tell me how you're doing that juggle between cash, people, execution, and strategy. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Amber. We'll be right back with Jerry Farrow of SunRx.
...401s, stock, mortgage, retirement, wealth. We cover it all. Voice America Business.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldana can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the Growth Strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldana Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldana played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldana Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ALDONA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONNA. TheGrowthStrategist.com. Achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is Voice America Business.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll-free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Welcome back to the program. This is The Growth Strategist, and I'm Aldana Ambler. And today's guest is Jerry Farrow of SunRx. And he's part of our Where Are They Now series. He's a former guest, and he was going to take on, you know, two or three new products while he was on this rapid rise to number five on the Inc. 500. And it's also part of our series where we're looking at the balance of cash, people, execution, and strategy. So, Jerry, one of the things I wanted to ask you, again, given what you were just talking about, taking on these, you know, these three gorillas and taking on this industry and introducing transparency and all this kind of risk-taking stuff, how do you stay resilient? I mean, the competitors are not going to be real happy with this. You know, I can see a new type of competition where they would try to do things like discredit you guys or tie you up in legal battles or, you know, that kind of nonsense rather than just head-on sales competition. You had any of that happen yet?
We have not.
No kidding.
No, we have not. And
it may be coming.
Well, I'm not sure. I'm pretty confident that our model is bulletproof, and we're very careful with what we represent. We let the data, you know, data is a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the data speaks for itself.
Yep.
So once we get our fingers on a historical claim file and run a free competitive analysis for a client, we do two things. One, we adjudicate against the 16 or 17 areas that, you know, the spreads have been built into, and then two, we drop our price in retrospectively on a claim by claim basis, so a client can actually get a armchair quarterback, you know, look back, 12-month look back, saying if we were the administrator during that period of time, you would have spent, you know, $8 million instead of $10 million.
Gotcha. I guess, you know, if it hasn't happened yet, just as a warning, because I've dealt with an awful lot of rapidly growing clients, one of the things that happens is when they come up over the radar like you have, there's a different type of competition. You know, sometimes it feels almost like corporate espionage. You know, how do we discredit these people? How do we tie up their money? How do we tie them up in court? You know, junk like that. And it can be, very disheartening and dissettling because, you know, you thought you were just doing good service and taking care of your customers and that would be enough. So, just as a suggestion to the listeners, if you're in this kind of a mode as well, you know, having the PR agencies help you with your crisis communication plan so that you're prepared for the worst. Because people can go out on the internet and just, you know, create problems that you didn't, you know, that weren't real. And the same thing with lawyers. Sometimes having to retain corporate counsel before you ever thought you'd need to so that your company is resilient for this next wave because now you're a target. So if it's not occurred to you yet, maybe I'd like to present that. In the last couple of months, you've introduced two or three new products. One of them was to be able to help the small groups. What did you introduce?
Yes, we had it was an 8-month initiative in development with two partners, Fidelity Security Life, the insurance company, and Elite Financial Services, a marketing general underwriter, kind of in our backyard across the river here in Philadelphia. And what we developed was a small group carve-out. The target market really is for groups 25 employee lives and above.
Mm-hmm.
And this would be typically someone that would have a Blue Cross and Blue Shield type coverage that would buy the pharmacy program as part of that package.
Mm-hmm.
Blue Cross will allow a carve-out, so you can actually remove the prescription drug benefit from your program. On the smaller groups, they were just too small to be in a self-funded environment, you know, a process that we do for 750, 1,000 live groups and above.
Right.
So what we've done is we've developed an insured product, so they're going to continue to pay a premium. I can tell you out of the gate on the 200 analysis that we've done for Elite's Book of Business, we've averaged anywhere between 18 and 20% below the current premium that these groups are experiencing. So the small group product really is a spreadsheet sale. It's
mm-hmm.
not as sophisticated a sale as this, the larger self-funded group.
Mm-hmm.
You've
but
got an employee. No, you've got an employer that's paying, you know, $10,000 a month. You go in and say, we're going to give duplicate your benefits, and the cost is $8,000 a month.
Yeah.
You know, he said, okay, well, you know, 30 days, where do I sign?
Hey, for that scale, that's a lot of money. It adds up. You know, a couple grand a month, you know, you have some real things you could be buying instead of feeling it go away.
Sure.
And you also built a discount card for underinsured?
We do. We relaunched. It was actually a product that we had originally used as our proverbial canaries to test all of our software out of the gate back in 02. And we dusted it off and retooled it and actually relaunched the product. It's for the uninsured, underinsured market. So we applied in applications where you've got a group that has a benefit maximum, you know, if they hit $1,000 or $2,500, then, you know, the benefits are, the prescription benefits are back on that employee and his family.
Mm-hmm.
Or for part-timers that may not even be eligible for benefits or, students.
Mm-hmm.
Or people, quite frankly, they're just in an uninsured, underinsured capacity. We've got a large group actually that we're going to be deploying in March, which is our first large sale. It's, about 1.2 million, covered members that are going to be rolling on in March that are all fall into that latter category, uninsured, underinsured.
And you also introduced a 340B program. It's like that's a gap between Medicare and Medicaid, right?
Yes. The 340B program satisfies the 100 to 200% below poverty level folks.
Yep.
And, you know, it's a pretty interesting group of folks. There's a definite need, and it was really a technology bridge that allowed us to create a cohesive program. The issue with 340B is the inventory needs to be separated. It's physically impossible for a pharmacy really to keep separate inventory for a 340B program, so we partnered with an organization that we created the interfaces that we keep track of a virtual inventory. So we can report back to a pharmaceutical company that, you know, XYZ Pharmacy just dispensed 30 Lipitor pills for this qualified applicant. We'll get the pharmacy to 340B pricing. We get the participant to 340B pricing, and the wholesale will just replenish that supply.
Gotcha.
When we hit certain thresholds. So it's pretty slick application, and it makes it very easy for the clinics and the health centers and the hospitals to use this application and actually get into this market to help those patients, which, you know, the technology or the lack of technology and the administration of that has really been problematic for some of the clinics and health centers and hospitals to participate.
So in the three products that you're introducing, you know, what I hear is you're trying not to leave any particular marketplace untapped. You're going to continue this hard drive to you know, drive out the greed, you know, raise the transparency, drive down the costs, et cetera, in this industry, you know, not just for companies that are above 1,000 employees, right?
Correct.
Sorry. Now, that's meaning, again, you're leading with strategy again. You are saying, you know, we're taking the lead, we meant it, and we're not just going to coast on our software and some big accounts, because you could have said, we're going to specialize in companies that are between 1,000 and 5,000 employees. We're going to do that really well. We're going to make a ton of money. We're going to have big boats and big, you know, big houses, and we're going to sell this thing in a couple of years, and that's just fine. Apparently, you're saying, you know, this is an important wave. You know, this is a big thing for you guys, and you're going to continue to lead. Yes?
Yes.
Okay, now, tell me how, when you're doing something that aggressive, tell me behind the scenes, because the listeners want to hear this. Are there key hires that you've had to make? How have you financed this? You know, there's got to be some major commitments to do this. What are a couple of things that you've had to do in the last 6 months to make this happen? Big things.
Well, one of the key things that actually made all of it possible is our new financial portal. We closed our first outside round of funding July of 06.
Mm-hmm. How much money did you need to bring in from outside?
And that was a $5 million investment.
Okay. Did you go with a VC or a private investor?
I was a private investment group.
Okay.
A little boutique investment firm out in Texas is proven to be a very nice partner for us.
Okay.
And combined, actually, we're going out for a second round of financing as we speak. Actually, we've got a few target acquisitions on the horizon, as well as adding some additional infrastructure. We've added some key sales folks.
Mm-hmm.
We've deployed a couple of key product specialists that are highly focused on each of these different product lines.
Mm-hmm.
And on the marketing front, you know, the sales hires that we've brought on board, each of which have background or contacts in those areas. For instance, on a small group, the small group product predominantly is not sold direct to an employer. It's sold through a brokerage or a consultant relationship that needs to be developed. So
mm-hmm.
My background and as well as the team that we've built on that particular product all have backgrounds in working with the various large insurance agencies, Elite Financial Services, just as a for instance, they have 450 small group clients that they'll be rolling over into this model over the next 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
Elite has a dozen or so direct relationships with third-party administrators and master general agents and general agents that have pockets of business. Conversely, on the discount card side, a lot of that product that will be marketed through to municipalities for free drug card type programs in their township for the uninsured, underinsured, as well as wholesale vendors that are marketing the aggregate benefits you see with Citibank, MasterCard, AAA.
Who oversees all those relationships? Where does that fall in your organizational structure?
Our senior management team, pretty much.
Is the chief marketing officer, really over keeping track of the relationships and deploying people and catching when something slips?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. We've got an outbound process and we have an inbound process, and we've gotten a lot of activity on the website. We've got a lot of believe it or not, over the last 6 months or 8 months or so, a lot of the folks that we've needed to bring in actually have come through resumes for our website.
I would think that you probably would need a really strong technology officer like a CIO that to make sure the software and the capacity and all this that you're talking about took ramped up, got debugged. Is that one of the hires that you've had to do in the last 6 months?
Actually, it has. We didn't hire a CIO in November.
Yeah. And I would think that the chief operating officer behind you would need to be really good because the scale of the purchases, the customers that are coming in, the deals, the transactions you're doing, the number of pharmacies that you're dealing with, the logistics of what your company is doing behind these deals. You got to have a pretty good COO. Did you hire one of those in the last 6 months?
Yes, we did.
Yeah. When we get back from the break, we're going to talk about, again, how do you balance cash, execution, strategy, and people when you're taking on three gorillas in a big marketplace. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. We'll be right back.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is Voice America Business.
Over there? Over there's the water. Whoosh, whoosh. And look at all this stuff I'm standing on. It's called sand, and it's everywhere.
This woman may sound silly to you and me.
It's made up of little tiny pieces of rocks. Teeny little pieces of rocks.
But to her 2-year-old son exploring the world around him, she makes perfect sense.
How does it feel when you touch the sand? Is it warm?
Uh-huh.
It's hard to hold in your hand, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Learning starts long before school does, and children are naturally curious. They want to learn, so follow their lead. Take simple, everyday moments, like sorting laundry or playing on the beach, and turn them into learning moments.
Is this water?
No.
Very good. This is sand. Oh, no, no, it's not food. It's sand. We don't eat sand.
Turn everyday moments into learning moments. Find out how at bornlearning.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldana can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the Growth Strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldana Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldana played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldana Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ALDONA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONNA. TheGrowthStrategist.com. Achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll-free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Welcome back to the show. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. And before we go too far, I want to make sure that there's some contact information for our guest. Jerry, how would people contact you? Because I think they're going to be interested in what you're doing. And I think you're going to get some customers out of this, frankly.
Sure. Our website address, of course, is www.sunrx.com.
Mm-hmm.
And our toll-free number to the SunRx headquarters is 1-800-786-1791.
Okay. And for people to reach me, my website is www.thegrowthstrategist.com. And to reach me by telephone, the toll-free number is 1-888-ALDONA. And my email is Aldona, A-L-D-O-N-N-A, at ambler.com. And so if you know my name, it's really easy to get me. Now, what I want to hear in what we're talking about is that, to grow this quickly and to juggle all the stuff that you're talking about and to introduce three new products on top of everything that you were doing, what were the biggest challenges in the last 6 months? Was it the execution part of following through? Was it finding the money? What was the challenge?
I think finding the right people has always been challenging. There's a lot of talent out there, but the process you need to go through to filter out the talent that thinks it's good talent and ultimately isn't good talent.
Mm-hmm.
And we run a pretty tight ship. If we're pretty comfortable with an individual, we'll give them a 60-day flyer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm of the school that believes that in 60 days you can tell whether a person's a keeper or
not. Oh, yeah,
keeper.
You can tell.
And
sure.
I think where a lot of companies fail is they try and put a square peg in a round hole and think that they're eventually going to round the corners off and make them fit. But
mm-hmm.
People don't change, and they're either a good fit or they're not a good fit. If they're not a good fit, they're never going to be a good fit. And
yeah, if they're workaholics and they really want to make stuff change, work and show up and all that kind of stuff, you're going to know. And
yeah.
If they coast, you're going to see it.
When I look around the office at 8:00 and I'm the only one sitting here, I know I don't have the right people. So.
Mm-hmm.
So
is there some secret that you've had?
Looking for me.
Is there something that your HR department does to screen that is a secret to success for you?
It depends on the level. We've got various testing that occurs at our HR level, depending on their skill sets and positions they're applying for. When you get into management, it's a little different. There are basic skill tests that we have, psychological battery tests and things, but beyond that, really it's a background history check and a judgment call. If this person, through an interview process, if you think this person's going to be a good fit or not.
Yeah. And who helps you with that? Are you doing a lot of the recruitment still, or?
I still am heavily involved in a senior positions and certainly sales and marketing and information technology. Our president pretty much oversees all the operations area and customer service and, you know, some of the areas that touch finance as well.
Were there any key bottlenecks that you've had to face in the last few months? You know, things that got, you know, the deadlines that you really wanted to have, you know,
Deadlines are always challenging, and getting everyone to buy in on those deadlines and based upon the work effort that we've got, you know, that we successfully had completed in a short period of time, we literally have an aggressive agenda. The things, the three products that launch typically would take our competitors a 3 to 4 year period of time.
Yeah.
We comprise down in 8 months. And
So give us some secrets to your success. People, you know, that are listening, they're not in your field, but they're CEOs of rapidly growing companies, and they want to know, how'd this guy do that? How did you shrink the normal launch time down so far? What are some of those ways you do that?
Two words, short chain. You got to keep everybody in a short chain. I'm not a proponent of meetings, but I like to have 3 meetings a day with my key folks, a 15-minute before hours, a 15-minute after hours, and a 15-minute prime time hours, which typically is you know, right around the lunch hour when the phones quiet down.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's being able to be flexible and continuing to adjust. So if you're going to miss the target, the objective for today, you know, we need to understand why we missed it, what wasn't on the plate that just got landed on the plate, and how we're going to recover and shuffle, and, you know, do we need to deploy more resources. And balancing resources properly, particularly when you're growing quickly, is critical.
Make do you sure have people you don't constantly have... saying to you, I need more help, I need more budget, give me more money?
The entire company tells me that every day.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, we all have to kind of pull in the belt, and, you know, it directly affects them. We put in a stakeholder program, so the more people we hire, if we deploy people at an issue, you know, it just affects our profitability, and it affects their, you know, bonus at the end
of the
year.
So do you sit real carefully on the budgets and the percentages to see that somebody isn't just kind of swelling?
Well, the budget really is kind of the guideline for where we're, what we're trying to do at the beginning of the year, and it's, you know, we spent a good solid 3 weeks in developing our 07 budget.
Mm-hmm.
But being in a position to be flexible with the budget as market conditions change or as different
products as your new products, I mean, some of them may take off faster than others.
Exactly.
You know.
So we set reserves aside. We're prepared to expand in certain areas if we've underestimated or overestimated certain product launches and things.
What's your biggest worry now? Like, if you talk about, you know, when you're pacing around or you have a sleepless night, what are you worried about?
Well, that's a loaded question.
No.
I guess my health, because I know, you know, the way that I built it, I worry about me being here every day, and I worry about my key management team being here every day, because if something happens to any one of us, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we kind of operate on a three-legged stool.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of have three minds that are part of our brain trust that's really been a secret to our success. So
mm-hmm.
I know that if something happened to any one of the three of us, we'd feel it, and we'd certainly recover and get past it, but...
You would take a hit. And you're doing stuff like making sure you're not on the same plane?
Yes, absolutely.
I know that sounds trite, but a lot of people miss that. They have their meetings on the planes when they travel.
Absolutely. And we've had trouble with our board not getting us three private jets, so it's been a commercial shock.
What is the matter with these people?
I'm not sure.
Cheap, cheap, cheap.
I'm not sure. Keep explaining to them the cost of having us standing around at the airport. But
I would imagine you're going to have a little less worry about money because at this point, some other venture capitalists and various companies are probably approaching you at this point, right?
Yes, we've had, I guess since we've gotten our most recent press with the Inc., we've had probably about 15 or 20 firms approach us.
I bet. And
our current, you know, outside partner is kind of managing that whole process and doing a nice job. So we're kind of letting him do the capital raise piece and working on the acquisitions, and we're taking care of the things, you know, on the home front.
Gotcha. Now, a lot of the listeners know that one of my businesses is I'm an intermediary, and I've been getting, you know, rapidly growing companies financing. But, you know, the type of financing you got last year is one thing. where you are now, where, you know, there's more of a feeding frenzy. You know, once somebody gives you the money and you've proven yourself, it's a different kind of a, you know, situation. You know, you have a very different sales pitch that you're given right now. You can be a lot more selective. Well, Jerry, I know we could talk forever because, I mean, what you're living with, you're walking the talk. You're actually doing what people say that they want to do and then never have enough nerve to do it. To balance the cash position that you're in, you know, you, in your case, you got outside financing, but it's also that you really watched the profitability and the pennies as you kept doing it. The technology you've invested into and the key people for the process so that the execution didn't fall apart on you. If you were making such a bold statement to the marketplace about being transparent and saving them costs, you couldn't fall apart in execution. You just simply couldn't. And you can tell that making sure that you have the right people that are consistent with your philosophies and what you're promising is going to be critical to this. So I would imagine that recruitment and retention of key people is going to be one of your primary things that you focus on in the next year, I would imagine, listening to you.
Yes.
I really thank you for being a guest on this. People were curious, you know, what happened to Jerry Farrow? Did all that cool stuff that he said he was going to do happen? And, hey, folks, it did. And he's celebrating being number 5 on the Inc. 500. My wish for you, as it is every week to my audience, is for accelerated growth with sustained profitability. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler, signing out.
Voice America Business would like to thank you for logging on and tuning into The Growth Strategist. Join us each Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time for another exciting episode of The Growth Strategist, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Hey, Dad.
What?
I can't get the ketchup bottle open.